Welcome to Passing the Plate, the podcast that's all about food, traditions, and the wonderful connections they create. I'm Lisa Lisson, the genealogist and family history expert behind Are You My Cousin?
And I'm Ashley Covelli, the food writer and recipe developer behind Big Flavors from a Tiny Kitchen. We'll be your guides on this flavor-packed adventure. We're not just talking about recipes. We're diving into family history, exploring new cultures, and preserving favorite recipes for future generations. In short, we're celebrating the stories and tastes that come with every bite.
So grab a seat at the table and let's embark on a journey of flavor, tradition, and connection. This is Passing the Plate, where every episode is a feast for the senses and a celebration of the ties that nourish our souls. Well, we're officially 13 episodes in, so we're celebrating by bringing you some of our favorite genealogy and food resources, a baker's dozen of them to be exact. But Ashley, what exactly is a baker's dozen?
So a normal dozen, as we all know, is 12, but a baker's dozen is actually 13. And what I've read online and heard from people in the industry is a long time ago, there was a practice where bakers and people in the baking trade would give 13 items when somebody ordered a dozen, just to kind of protect against somebody trying to say, hey, you shortchanged me on the weight or the measurement. So they'd like throw in an extra kind of to cover their bases. And I think that's just it's funny, but it's also kind of the way I see it now. If somebody orders a dozen of something and you give them 13, you're like, hey, I got a little extra. Like, what a great deal and how thoughtful of them. So, you know, like if you order 6 chicken wings and they give you 7 or 8, like, hey, bonus, you know?
Exactly. Yes.
Since we're doing a baker's dozen, we're going to split up the food and genealogy resources. So I'm going to share some of my resources, and then Lisa's going to share some of hers. So hopefully you may have heard of some of these websites or resources before, but hopefully you'll find something in here that's new to help you out, whatever type of research or resource you're looking for. So the first one that I'm going to share is a website. It's very well known. Probably most people who are into food and cook at home are familiar, but it's called Serious Eats. And their slogan is, good cooks know how, great cooks know why. And it says, founded in 2006, serving 8 million food nerds a month. So I feel like Serious Eats is a great resource for, like, say you want to make something, whether or not it's complicated, maybe it's just like roasting a chicken. They won't just tell you how to roast a chicken. They'll tell you why they selected a certain temperature. They'll go into a lot more in-depth info, so really you can nerd out about it. And so you're not just going through the motions. You're learning about the process a little more from people who really know what they're doing. So they have a lot of different people who write for them, and they have a wide range of recipes and resources on that site. So that's for sure one of my favorites. Next up, one of my favorite TV cooks, I grew up watching her, and I actually got to meet her a few years ago, which was lovely, Lydia Bastianich, and apologies if I didn't say that very properly, I'm not Italian, but she's wonderful. I believe I was introduced to her through her cooking show on PBS back when I used to stay with my grandparents a lot. We would watch her together, and she cooks Italian food. She's got a million cookbooks, tons of recipes. She has some restaurants. So her website is a great resource. And if you ever are looking for inspiration for some real Italian food, she's great. And a lot of it, she makes it not intimidating. So she really makes it more accessible for home cooks, which I appreciate. Speaking of cookbooks, one of my favorite resources, which is a website that connects to your local library, is Libby. So there's an app you can use on your phone or your tablet. Libbyapp.com is the website. The reason this pertains to cookbooks and cooking for me is you can access a digital catalog of cookbooks, resources, and everything from home at any time of night or day. I'm a night owl. So you can peruse cookbooks without actually having the physical book. If you in the middle of the night are craving something from a cuisine you've never tried before, you can search, find it, and download it to your device and take it for a test drive. It's also a great way to read stories behind certain cuisines or different chefs. There's a lot of great food reading that's out there, not even necessarily just cookbooks, but I think it's a great way to look at a book before you decide if you want to buy it. And of course, you can cook right from it. Next up is one of the longest running food blogs out there. A lot of people are very familiar with. It's called Pinch of Yum, and their tagline is simple recipes made for real, actual, everyday life. They've gone through lots of changes over the years with their like layout of their website, the types of recipes they have, but they have a great team that works there. Lots of really great content, different types of recipes, whether you're looking for something quick and easy, something a little more involved, and they really break things down in a way that's easy for home cooks to follow. All right, my fifth recommendation is Joy the Baker. She's another one of those like OG kind of food bloggers who's been around for a really long time. Her website has a ton of recipes for baking mostly. She also has a few cookbooks. I'll say her lemon bars are one of my all-time favorite recipes. They're very easy. I thought they'd be difficult. They're really easy to make. She also, she has great tutorials for making like layer cakes and different types of frostings and brownies. She does have savory bakes also, but she's a really great resource. I think I own two of her cookbooks also.
I love lemon bars, so I'm going to check that one out, definitely.
Yeah, they're very, I think that's the recipe that made me like lemon bars. And then my last recommendation, because I could recommend a million different resources here, is something called Road Food. And that is, if you're traveling somewhere, or even if you want to check out in your area, you can go to this website and you can search for, it says Your Guide to Local Affordable Eats, Find Restaurants Near Me. And you can look at a map, you can click on See Maps, and you can filter, you can tell it where you are based on the city or whatever. You can filter by dish type, restaurant type, and they have kind of little, almost like banner, like awards, basically, for the different restaurants. Like when I just opened the site just now, two of the ones near me, one of them says memorable, one of the best, and then it tells like a little blurb about the place, and then the next one says excellent, worth a detour, and these are two restaurants that I do enjoy. But it's great because like you can see like there's one on their homepage right now with latest reviews that says legendary, worth driving from anywhere, Sweet Teas, that's T'S, in Thompson, Georgia, and when you click on it, there's a review, and it gives you like a whole little overview of it, and it'll have their hours, whether or not they serve alcohol, what meals they serve, if they have outdoor seating, if they accept credit cards. But it's kind of cool because you could look based on if you're going to be driving somewhere or you're going to be staying somewhere. This one, I wish I would have seen this back when my brother lived near Atlanta, because this says 5 minutes from the interstate between Augusta and Atlanta at a country crossroads where nothing else is going on, Sweet Tea serves cafeteria-style Southern fare. And then it just goes into a whole thing. It tells you about like the weight that they might have. And then there are photos and videos, and then there's a section underneath that says what to eat. And like the top one is banana pudding, and like Southern banana pudding, yes, please. Fried chicken, boiled okra. I don't know that I've had boiled okra before.
I'm not a fan. I've had it. I like steamed better.
Okay.
Or I like fried, but I'm not a fan of boiled okra. It can go wrong. It can get slimy really quickie.
Yeah. I have one that I do in the oven that we really mm-hmm. like. They've got squash casserole. That's one of my mom's very favorite things. Apple dumplings, peach cobbler. So it's kind of cool because they have a whole overview, and then they have a discussion section if people want to add comments, and then at the very bottom under that is nearby restaurants. So if you're already there, it'll give you kind of a recommendation of other things in the area. So I think it's just a fun resource and just something other than recipes, but definitely still in the food realm.
Are you worried your family recipes will be lost to time? Imagine generations gathering around your family, sharing stories, and enjoying dishes passed down for years. With the Passing the Plate video webinar and ebook bundle, you can make that happen. You'll learn how to capture those cherished recipes before they're lost from memory, uncover the secrets and heartwarming stories behind each dish, and connect you to your family's history in a powerful and delicious way. To learn more, head to passingtheplate.org bakersdozen.com/resources. Okay, so actually, I love that list. I've already made note of some things I'm going to check out. But now, I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit. Let's head over and talk about family history and genealogy research and the resources that I absolutely love. And so I'm going to share my top six with those. So one of the first ones is really actually more of a group of websites as opposed to individual would be genealogy databases. I think when we're doing online research these days for our ancestors, most of us are going to end up and need to be in one of the genealogy databases that are there. One of the most common and popular is FamilySearch. It is free to use, and you can use them. They have a lot of tutorials on there as well. The other three that I use a lot would be Ancestry.com. I think a lot of us have heard about them. They have a lot of DNA kits, but they have a tremendously large database when it comes to the records that we need. MyHeritage is another one. They have a large number of records as well. And Find My Past, which is actually a little more focused on the UK, but I have a lot of UK ancestors, and so I use them quite a bit as well. So I kind of group that. My favorite resource is really making sure you have a good genealogy database. I'll make sure I'll link all of those down in the show notes for you as well.
And you've done some work with some of these websites, haven't you?
Yes, actually pretty much all of them at this point. So, I've got some tutorials over on my website. I'm happy to link those. You'll find those links to those tutorials in the show notes as well. If you're choosing one or two and want to get started, it'll get you a little bit of a jump start along your way.
Do you have a recommendation if somebody was going to start in one place, or does it depend what they're particularly searching for? Like if they're only going to choose one.
Well, a couple categories. If you're only going to choose one, I would choose either Ancestry or MyHeritage. FamilySearch is very good. They are free. The others all are subscription based, and there are reasons for using both types of resources. But usually at this point, I like my personal research tends to be Ancestry and MyHeritage that I've been using. So number two on my list is really to make sure you're making a good use of your state archives. So each state in the U.S. has a state archives, and that's where you find a lot of they house the records, the older records. Now, they have physical buildings, but many of them have extensive online digital collections, and they are free to access. And so when you're looking for records, and whether you're starting out or whether you've been researching for a while, make sure you are tapping in and seeing what is available online through the archives digital collections. So if your ancestors lived in North Carolina, for example, you'd want to check out the digital collection of records on the North Carolina State Archives. Absolutely, you can visit in person, and I highly recommend that you do, but sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes you live too far away, and it's difficult to get to an archives, but more and more are putting the collections that are mostly used with genealogy onto their website. So just keep checking back for those. They do update those quite a bit. Now, I love a good story, and it's probably not a surprise when it comes to that, because Ashley and I talk a lot about our stories, the stories behind recipes, the connections that we have through family. And where else are you going to find really good stories from times in the past but the newspapers? I love reading historical newspapers. They are so much fun. And it's really the best way to really understand your ancestor and the community that they lived in, because the community really shaped them in a lot of ways. Now, it's really great when you can find your ancestor written up in the paper. And I tend to find my ancestor written up in the paper when, well, maybe they've been doing less than upright citizen type of things, shall we say. But that's great, because then I can read and learn more about them. But I do enjoy
an episode on that. Lisa's the family history,
my ancestors in the newspaper.
Yeah.
So that would be interesting. Yeah. So they're not always outlaws, just skirting the edges there just a bit every now and then. Just on the fringe. No, but it's those ancestors who were kind of, I don't want to go so far as the black sheep or the ones that were a little more in trouble kind of things. They're the ones who generated the records, which makes research a little bit easier for them. But anyway, there are two places that I go for this, guys. The first one is Chronicling America, which is from the Library of Congress. So it is free to use. So I use that. But I also really enjoy using a subscription-based newspaper research for historic newspapers, which is newspapers.com. So I use those two together. One of the things that's really difficult with newspaper research when we're looking for that for our ancestors and trying to see what we can find is that there's really no one place that covers all the newspapers because there are so many newspapers out there. But between these two, I can usually do a really good job and feel like I can get a good search for my ancestry in. And then another resource that I use a lot that is absolutely free. Isn't this great? I love to make sure that we share free resources here. It's Google Books. And this is not a genealogy or family history website, but it is just straight up Google Books. But on that, you will find a lot of written family histories. I find things such as community histories, county histories, just former genealogists who've written up their own family histories that are out there that I can then use as part of my research. And, you know, in many ways, these are free. So that's a great resource to use.
I wouldn't have thought of that. That's good to know.
Oh, there are hundreds and thousands. I actually do have tutorials on that. I have a YouTube video as well as a blog post on that. I'll be happy to link that out if anybody wants to check it out. And it works whether how you would use it and interact Google Books is exactly the same if they're looking for older cookbooks that might be beneficial or, you know, more family oriented or more family history oriented type of books as well. Not everything is on there you can read for free. They have to be in the public domain to be able to be read in their full version, but there's lots of great resources out there and you'd be surprised what you can find and use there.
Is public domain, is that like 100 years or something?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but in general, it's going to be somewhere around the 1923, 1924 time. If it was published prior to that, then okay. It would be in the public domain for a book.
So yeah, 100 years.
Yeah, so one of the books that I use extensively in my research is actually, believe it or not, it's a law dictionary. It's Black's Law Dictionaries. And I like to use either the first or the second edition. I think the second edition was published in 1910. Well, you might go, but why would you do that? Well, because a lot of the documents and the resources that I'm researching in, they are legal documents, but they're written prior to 1910. So I can use, you know, I'm using a resource that can then define some of those more archaic terms that I might have a harder time finding now because legal terms changed over the years. So what it might have meant in an 1880 document might be different if I looked it up for a more modern definition. So that was one way to use, that's one way that I use Google Books. I read some really strange things, Ashley, when it comes to Google Books, because they're quite dated books, but they're quite beneficial to my research, certainly.
That's great.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I absolutely love, and for any of you guys who have followed me, like from a family history or genealogy standpoint, is I love old family photographs. I was very fortunate. I have inherited hundreds of them. People find out I'm the one in the family who will take anything that they want to send me. And so they send me boxes of photographs at times. But I also go seek out more because I'm trying to put names and faces. You know, I mean, what's cooler than being able to trace your ancestors, but then actually find a picture of them and get them, you know, and document that. So there's an app that I use called PhotoMine, PhotoMyne. And it's a scanning app. Now, there are a lot of great apps that will do the scanning for you. And a lot of times this is my go-to app when I am on the road and maybe I am visiting a relative and they have a photo that I haven't seen before, or I ask and they're like, oh yeah, let's pull out the album and go through it. Well, I can use that app. I can scan right there on my phone and get a really nice scan of the photo. And then I can, once I'm back home, well, even from my phone, I mean, I can either keep it in the PhotoMine app or I can upload it straight into my Google Photos. So I'll sync it with my Google Photos and I can get those photographs because I can guarantee you when you go visit your aunt, she's not going to give you those photographs to take with you. I can guarantee you that, but you want to capture them. So I find that that's really helpful. The apps have gotten so good over the last few years on the phone. So
technology is so cool.
It did though. I love it. And it's one, I love it because I can do it and then it allows me to actually, tap it and then it'll take a picture of the back and it will keep those two together. So if it's labeled on the back, it'll keep those two images together and I don't lose it.
That's really handy because I know it can be easy for things to separate if you're not careful on how you import them. But I think This is so far, and you've only shared five of your six so far, but this is really interesting because I think a lot of people tend to think of genealogy as like just kind of analog, not necessarily the digital things that you can do with it. Just like you don't have to be sitting, like we were talking in a previous episode, going through microfiche at the library. Like you can be doing some of this stuff from your phone or from anywhere with an internet connection, which is really cool.
Absolutely. And that's definitely, I mean, there are occasions that I go into microfilm, but that is, it's been quite a while now since I've had to go into microfilm, because a lot of that is being digitized and put out on various databases. So I really don't have to get into the microfilm very often. There might still be some cases coming up, but for the most part, I don't really have to do that anymore. So it's, anyway, it's better for the eyes. That's for sure. You get a little cross-eyed reading some of those microfilm machines. But so, and then the numbers, my other one that I use is, I actually like Family Tree Maker software. It is just as it says, it's a software that is, which is where I build my family tree out. And one of the things that I like about this one is that it does sync with Ancestry.com, but it also syncs with Family Search. So I could, you know, if I'm working on my tree on Ancestry.com, I can push a button and I can sync it with my offline tree as well. So I think it's important to have a tree, an offline tree, as opposed to just an online tree. Many people build their trees only at Family Search or only on one of the major databases like Ancestry, MyHeritage, FamilyPast. But I want to make sure I've got an offline version of it as well. And then I save a backup because I do not want to lose all that work. Should something happen to one of the companies and your tree is only there, then you're out of luck. So I always make sure I have my own copies and my own working copies using the software. And then I back up as well. So
my husband's going to love hearing about these resources because he got really deep into his family genealogy research over the last couple of years. And so I'm not sure if he's heard of all of these. I know for sure some of them, but maybe not all of them. So that's great.
Oh, it makes sense. I know he's gotten really into it. And I was a little jealous because so much of his was spelled out so well. I was like, oh, wow. So but I'm thrilled that he was able to get bitten by the genealogy bug, as we call it.
Yeah, I know, like for my family, a lot of it would be really difficult for me because I have family in Iran and the written language isn't even something that I can read. And a lot of it's not available online. So it's cool that it's in Italian, but he's able to, you know, figure things out. And of course, since this is a baker's dozen, we're adding our website as a favorite resource. So you can find our website at passingtheplate.org. We post show notes for each episode of our podcast, as well as separate blog posts on topics like modernizing family recipes for a busy lifestyle, uncovering heritage and flavorful stories through family recipes, resources like our webinar on documenting family recipes for future generations, an interactive ebook for recording your recipes and the stories behind them, and lots more.
Find the links to all of the resources that we've discussed in today's episode in the show notes at passingtheplate.org/13. Well, that's a wrap on this episode of Passing the Plate. We hope you enjoyed our journey into the world of food, traditions, and the amazing connections they create.
As always, it's been a pleasure sharing these delicious stories with you. Remember, food is more than just sustenance. It's a way to connect the dots between our past, present, and future.
And until next time, happy eating, happy connecting, and pass the plate. Head to passingtheplate.org/podcast for show notes.